You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, everybody. This is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. One guest this week, a familiar guest. He's been on this podcast many times. It is author James Andrew Miller, the best-selling writer of books on CAA, ESPN, Saturday Night Live, and HBO. You may know Jim from his Origins podcast as well. And this conversation will, I think it'll primarily focus on ESPN, but we might get a little bit into HBO's House of Dragons as well. And pleased to be joined by James Andrew Miller. Welcome back to the Sports Media Podcast.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
All right. Here's where I want to start. I want to play this from episode 39 of the Sports Media Podcast. That's February 12th, 2019. So more than 3 years ago. We're nearly on 250 episodes. This is Jim Miller from episode 39 of the Sports Media Podcast. All right, Jim, I want to start at the beginning, and that is, let's just sort of go generalize. What was your reaction to Adnan Virk being fired, and how do you look at that situation?
Well, it made me carsick, and I think, you know, the truth is that we all know that there are every day, there are a lot of conversations that happen between employees of ESPN, executives, producers, talent, otherwise, on background with creatures like us. We also know that this is a guy who would work there for 9 years. He bled ESPN. He's got four young boys. He's got a moral compass, despite the fact that some people now are saying otherwise. And here's the other thing too, which is, how the fuck did that get leaked?
Jim, I can listen to you curse all day. You believe that was 3+ years ago, Adnan Virk getting an absolute raw deal with ESPN. You know, Jim, incredibly enough, like, leaks have not stopped at ESPN. I thought that they would end with Adnan Virk, but incredibly enough, they're still coming out of that place. How is that possible?
Well, you know, I thought you were going to play a clip like of me telling people to sell Netflix short at $650 a share or something. Of course, it's me cursing. I think the only time I've ever done that. But truth be told, of course, leaks have continued and they will continue. And it's sad to think back, but the good news is that Adnan has more than survived and is thriving. So,
yeah,
you know. I think that's probably the most important thing that I come away with from that.
Look at you being the diplomat. Yeah, no, Adnan, he's got some good gigs regarding baseball and elsewhere. And yeah, I think he is in a great position. The fact is that was an absolutely bullshit firing. I mean, it sort of given what the quote unquote leak was, given like the leaks since then. But anyway,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but it does highlight one thing that I tried to discuss in the book and that has remained somewhat constant since the book came out, which is that ESPN, working at ESPN, is not an entitlement program. It is very, very tough world. It's a political world. There are numerous camps. At one point, there were as many as 7,000 employees. Now it's a couple thousand less. But the point is that there are different camps. There are different sources of power underneath Jimmy, or back then underneath Skipper, and throughout ESPN's history. And so it's sometimes a difficult place to navigate. And if you are perceived to be, I think, outside of a certain camp or whatever, and you do something that makes yourself vulnerable, there are people there that are going to go for the jugular.
Yeah. So again, we're just having, we have sort of had a little bit of fun with Jim, but I mean, he's dead on. And Jim, I apologize in advance, whether it's Chris LaPlaca, Mike Soltis, or Josh Krulowitz, when you get the call for the opening. Enjoy that. All right. So here, but it's a good intro because here's where I want to start. I like to have you on to sort of take a very writ large view of ESPN. And again, I mean, you wrote an entire book on it, so we could do a podcast that'd be like, you know, 20 hours on the different facets. You know, where they sit at the moment, they're in a great place with the NFL. They've sort of rehabbed that relationship and signed their deal. New announcers with Monday Night Football. They're still on these twin paths where they're collecting cable sub fees while at the same time trying to build their direct-to-consumer business at ESPN+. Jimmy Pitaro, not too long ago, re-signed for ESPN. So very clearly, Bob Chapek and company are happy with the job he's done. You know, I would say even with all the ESPN's going to sell, ESPN's going to, you know, all the alarmists out there who sort of think the business is in trouble, the business is doing well, Jim, in my opinion. And they even have this ace in the hole. And if they ever decide to actually cut a big time deal with a gambling company, they're looking at potentially billions of dollars coming in. So I don't know if, you know, I don't know if ESPN's going to spin off. I don't know if they're not. I don't know what ESPN's going to be in 10 years from now. But if you're asking me about ESPN at the moment, ESPN seems like a pretty healthy place to me at the moment, business-wise. But you're more of an expert on this than me. How do you?
No, I think, listen, I think you gave a pretty good answer to your question. All right, goodbye. No, I'm just kidding. Look, I think one of the things that I find most provocative about ESPN right now as we sit here at the end of 2022 is that its future in terms of the business model is fundamentally unstable. And you have to go back a long way in the early days of ESPN, not to bore everybody with early ESPN history, but people would run to the bank when they got their paychecks because they didn't know if there was enough money to give them their salary. But for the better part of its history, ESPN has been on terra firma because of that dual revenue stream that you just alluded to, cable fees and advertising. And it was massive. You know, as much as I enjoyed Bob Iger's book, I thought ESPN's role was greatly diminished in it because when you think about all those Pixar and Marvel and all those things that Disney did for many years, ESPN was throwing off double-digit billion-dollar revenues. They were throwing off a ton of money, and Disney was smartly used that cash to buy a lot of acquisitions. And there were times that they were worried that about a la carte. It seems so innocent now. They had a big lobbying effort in Washington, D.C., because they were afraid that people like my mother, who paid, you know, whatever she paid for her monthly cable bill and never turned on ESPN, why were they getting $5, $6, $7 a month of that bundle? But look, at one point they were in close, basically 100 million homes. You multiply that times $7 a month, it gets pretty serious very fast. So they were worried about that. They beat that back. But then, of course, came direct-to-consumer. I think right now it's about between 30 and 40% of people who are looking to streaming to when they go to TV. It's going to become more. The households that ESPN is in now has dropped below 75 million, if I'm correct. And so there is this uncertainty in part because not only because of what's going to happen with streaming, but most importantly, is there a financial rainbow at the end of streaming? Let's just say that you kick ass with streaming and you have all these subscribers. Just because you have subscribers doesn't mean that you're going to ever have the kind of profits and the kind of money that you're going to that you're able to pile off of from the cable bundle. And so I think there's a lot of uncertainty. There's a couple of weeks ago, bunch of people told me there were rumors in Burbank that they were cutting Jimmy off, so to speak, in terms of ESPN reducing its financial aggressiveness in future acquisitions. I think you saw some of that in the Big Ten deal. It was, I mean, obviously Jimmy did a great job with the NFL and with the SEC, and much to CBS's dismay, but wasn't able to engineer that Big Ten deal. And I think that hurt. But at the same time, you know, you have a big NBA deal coming up sooner than we all realize. And that's going to be, there's the paradox. It's going to be incredibly expensive at a time when a lot of these companies don't have the war chest that they used to have. But if history has proven anything, we saw with the NFL, these companies are going to find a way to pay for it. And so
I was just going to ask you, I want to just follow up on this. How concerned should ESPN, I guess really in this case, we're saying about Pitaro. How concerned should Pitaro be about Amazon, Apple, and these companies whose primary business is not sports, it's something else, and they have endless amounts of money in theory to go get what they want? The only thing that holds us back, Jim, is the leagues have to decide if they want to go with the streamers, you know? And like, if the NBA all of a sudden decides, hey, you know what, Apple's $10 billion or Amazon's $10 billion looks pretty good, and we're going to scale back with ESPN and Turner. I don't think that's going to happen in the NBA, just so the audience knows, but how concerned should guys like Pitaro be about these new players?
I think they would. I think they're smart to be concerned in the sense that it's not that they're going to take over their business, but there may be inventory, there may be certain deals that they can get. I mean, look, I don't think ESPN wanted Thursday Night Football, so the fact that it's on Amazon isn't crushing to them. But I think it's instructive to note that Amazon is doing Thursday Night Football. They're putting together a great broadcast. Unfortunately, they've been screwed over by some of the worst games since the invention of pigskin, but that's not their fault. And so I think what's going to happen is you're going to see probably with Amazon, and certainly, look, Apple can find change in their proverbial couch that could pay for some of these rights situations that some of these other companies are struggling with. And so if it's a financial challenge, it could be really brutal. But I think at the end of the day, the leagues want to make sure that they're at the places that people know about.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
I want to ask you about ESPN and gambling, because, you know, they've, my assessment of them would be that they've slowly leaned into this. They're not all in. You're not seeing their games sort of littered with odds and stuff like that, but they certainly have gambling shows. ESPN Plus, I think, has some sports gambling inventory or information shows. You see it a little bit on .com. But Jim, if nothing else, if they decide to really go all in, or if, I should really be specific, if Disney decides to go all in, you are looking at a game-changing numerical figure depending on what they do or a deal that they cut. From your perspective, how do you see the possible impact of going really all in with sports gambling and Disney as it relates to ESPN?
Well, you know, it's like when they asked Willie Sutton, Marty Robb Banks, he says, well, that's where the money is. So I think that in a challenging time that we were talking about just 10 minutes ago, you can't ignore a growing sector like gambling. I think they have been slow in terms of jumping in all the way like they did with 3D television. Remember that? And you never know how it's going to be perceived. You also don't know, in this case, some of the political or social repercussions of it. Look, there are still a lot of people who are concerned about this driving a whole new generation of addicts and causing people severe problems in their lives. You know, gambling has, you can find people to acquit or convict all the time. So I think that they've been probably smart to be so judicious in their moves. But I also believe if you start to look at some of the numbers that are coming through these states that have adopted it, they're big and they're important. And so I don't see them going back on it. And in a way, you can start to see that they might be saying to themselves, look, if we're really going to be losing X in the cable bundle, we have to do everything we can, including gambling, to offset it and get into it in a bigger way.
I want to add talk to you. I want to spend the next couple of minutes on talent. We're taping this on a week where in The Athletic, I wrote about Stephen A. Smith promoting his podcast. By the way, just for full disclosure, Stephen A. Smith's podcast is a collaboration between his production company and Cadence 13. I think anyone listening to this knows that my podcast is on Cadence 13 independent of The Athletic. So just sort of get that out there so people know. So I asked, because I thought it was interesting, Jim. So Stephen A., who has a long interest in politics and has been on political shows. In fact, when he was in the wilderness from ESPN, he did a lot of political guest spots. He's gone on Fox News multiple shows to promote his podcast, and he's had I know he had Sean Hannity, I believe, on his podcast. So the larger point is he's been going on politically oriented shows, not being shy about offering commentary in politics. ESPN regarding this says that this is a request that Stephen A. made. We respect that he has this other show, and we grant him permission to do this. I'm paraphrasing, but those are my words. And so, like, I think that's great. I think all ESPN talent, by the way, if they feel passionate about something, should be allowed on any show. So this is sort of what I asked them. I'm like, okay, you're allowing Stephen A. to do this. So if there's like a person at ESPN who's just so passionate about an issue away from sports, can they go on Fox News or Sirius POTUS or MSNBC? And what do you think ESPN's response was? We take individual requests when they come in. Most of our requests for talent are sports-based. I read between the lines as Stephen A's got Jordan rules. Guys like Schefter and Joe Buck and Troy Aikman have Jordan rules, and not everybody has Jordan rules. So how do you see it? Again, it's more of a thought exercise for you than a specific question, but I thought it was interesting.
You were just talking about ESPN's repaired its relationship with the NFL. And when Jimmy took the job, there were two things on his plate, first and foremost. One was, first, fixing things with the NFL. Second was making sure that politics and sports were separated. Now, Jimmy did a very good job on the first. Forces beyond his control on a national level, including George Floyd and other things, made keeping politics and sports separate impossible. I mean, the toothpaste is out of the tube. If you look at ESPN talent feeds, even though no one really goes as deep as like Jamel used to when she was at ESPN or whatever, I think that it's very clear that ESPN talent, they have to be warned about it in terms of from their agents and their own minds about going too far, because we live in such a polarized, divisive world. But I think there is that marriage there. You know, I once had a meeting with Skipper. I think I was interviewing about something, and I was waiting in the corporate offices at ABC New ABC Corporate on West 66th, and sitting there in the lobby. And then they said he's just finishing up his last meeting, and out walked Stephen A. Smith, and he just looked miserable. And I walked into Skipper's office. I said, "God, Stephen A. looked miserable." He goes, "Yeah, he's leaving the company. He's leaving the company." And that was, you know, back whenever, I forget what year it was, but you have to think back on the fact that Stephen A. was voted off the island, came back and put together one of the most impressive comebacks in ESPN history. And then
I think the most impressive, by the way.
Mark Shapiro,
there's no better comeback.
Negotiated a deal that's enough to make you a Bolshevik. I mean, that, you know, particularly at a time when other ESPN talent were taking severe cuts, Stephen A. went, you know, north of 12 million. And I think, so let's just use that as a starting point. It's just an amazing journey that he's been on. I think, you know, look, one of the things that Stephen A. going on Hannity shows, not only about friendship, but also, you know, sports is not enough for Stephen A. Sports is going to be home base. But I think this is a guy who wants to actively contribute to the dialogue on of the culture, of politics, of everything. I think that, you know, if Neil deGrasse Tyson came up with a new set of planetary principles about planetary particle physics or something like that, and Stephen A. was able to read in on it, he wouldn't hesitate to give an opinion on it. He's not shy. He wants to make his opinions known. And I think he's interested in a lot of things. It does get confusing, though. And I think that your question to ESPN, even though they can answer with, "We're going to do this on a case-by-case basis," it gets very, very tricky, because exceptionalism is difficult, you know, and they still have, I mean, the problem is for the talent, though, that there's not that many pieces of talent, I hate to call them that, but it sounds like meat, but that ESPN feels like they can live without. It used to be, like Berman, Simmons, John Gruden, when they had Monday Night Football, there were probably like, you could put together 15 people, you know, and oh my gosh, we need this one for Chris Fowler for you know, College Game Day, and we can't imagine this without, that list has gotten very small. And in fact, one of the things that you see in negotiations now, when ESPN management is dealing with talent, they basically, a lot of times, they throw out a number and they say, this is, look, somebody is making like 1.5. The number is like this, we're going to pay him 850 or her. And the manager, the agent says, what are you talking about? That's like, yeah, well, that's all we can do right now. That's all we're going to do. It's like, well, wait a second. That's crazy. You know, so-and-so has been here for so long and has such a following or whatever. ESPN doesn't care. They care about making sure that they are financially rigorous, and they are making sure that they are not dependent on, you know, so many individual talents. And they also know, and they're comforted by the fact that, I mean, obviously when it comes to Joe Buck and Troy Aikman and others at that level, there's a big marketplace and there's a feeding frenzy. But if you're talent and you're like a sports center anchor, or you're doing shoulder programming for even the NFL or NBA or whatever, you know, they don't think that there's a lot of, they're either willing to lose you, or they're willing to call your bluff that you're going to be able to get as much as you want someplace else. And so that has fundamentally changed the equation. And it used to be, you know, like back in the glory days of Nick Khan and others, they would have long buck sheets with all their clients and all these big numbers next to them. Those things don't happen anymore. So I would be very careful if I'm a ESPN talent going to management saying, well, you let Stephen A. do it, and unless you let me do it, I'm going to create a stink, because you just may not survive it.
That's good. All right. So two things there. One, every place has these, the reality is the rules are different for some than others. Like Ken Rosenthal at The Athletic can do things that I can't do. It's just, that's the reality of sort of life. He's a larger name. I will say though, Jim, that I think you have to concur with this, and I think you just sort of did. If Chris McKendry, Dan Orlovsky, or Booger McFarland went to ESPN today and said, I'm incredibly passionate about, and we'll sort of put it under the large framework of politics issue X, and I want to go on said show that's a news-oriented show. I got to believe none of those guys are getting permission. I think it is a very small group of people at the end of the day, Stephen A., and maybe Schefter, and Wojnarowski, and Joe Buck, and Troy Aikman, and you know, maybe Herb Street. Like, I think there are certain people, like you said, where I feel like the talent has more leverage than the organization, if that's the right way to frame it. But everybody else, like you said, be very careful. And if you were an agent, you'd tell them, don't be making requests that, you know, you can't live with when they say no.
But remember something else, though. A lot of those people, they're where they're at because of their vast bases of support, right? They either have incredible Twitter followings like Woj does or Schefter, or they're so above class in their sector that because of their popularity. And a lot of them don't want to risk that popularity by going on a show that could be potentially divisive and cause an uproar. Stephen A. doesn't care. I mean, that's one of the, I think, one of the takeaways from this. I even if Woj, I mean, I'm just using him as an example, and maybe I'm wrong, even if he's best friends with Rachel Maddow or Sean Hannity, and he gets invited on that show, I don't think he goes. A lot of those people don't want to do that. They want to just be Switzerland politically, and they just want to focus on what they do for a living. Stephen A. is an outlier, and I think he's got a ton of gumption, and he has interests well beyond the field. So I don't think that management is worried that they're going to be all of a sudden flooded with a ton of requests.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
All right, two more things, and I want to end on House of Dragons because I'm so into the show, and you obviously wrote the book on HBO. I love talking to you about sort of talent salaries at ESPN and sort of wish casting or forecasting a bit. The last time I had you on, I don't remember what month it was, but we were sort of talking about the shrinking middle class at ESPN. A lot of on-air people obviously were asked to take pay cuts, some absurd over-the-top pay cuts. Kenny Mayne was a perfect example of that. When he told me he had to take a 61% pay cut, which one, I appreciate Kenny Mayne being as specific, but two, it sort of illuminated and gave you insight into where ESPN was. But it strikes me, Jim, that again, like the future of ESPN is like, I don't know, 10 gigantic high priced people. And then whatever the, sort of standardized payment is for, you know, on-air talent, however you want to frame that in whatever year we're talking about. Do you see it that way, or am I off here? Like a wealth class, a shrinking middle class, and then none of these people are going to the, you know, to the Bowery. We're all talking about first world problems here, but within these first world problems, that's how I see it.
No, I just alluded to it. I think it's actually a shrinking upper class and an expanding middle class.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Because those numbers have come down. But let's if you want to, let's get specific about it, okay?
All right.
I believe, unless I'll stand corrected, but I believe Chris Fowler's deal is up next year. And I don't believe he's extended early. So Chris Fowler is, I love the guy personally, but I also admire him professionally.
Yeah, great talent.
He does tennis. He does football. He is a good, great employee. He also, I don't know, for people who are listening and follow him on Instagram, he's gotten kind of
new agey.
Yeah,
it's good. Yeah, he's a self-help. He believes in self-help. He's always been.
But it's not.
He and his wife, they're always they're really into fitness and sort of good living, healthy living.
It's not icky. He does it in a really great way. And I would say that, you know, there's probably, he works damn hard, but there's probably something for him in that space as well, if he ever wants to expand his empire. But let's just take Chris as an example. So he's making a healthy living, probably not as much as his representatives would want, or maybe they were pleased at the last deal. But obviously, when they go in, they're going to want more. That's the operative word, right? Or at least to stay the same, I would guess. But ESPN has spent the last several years whittling away at people, as we've discussed. Big name anchors. I don't want to call any of them out because it's not fair, but there's a lot of people on ESPN now who are still there, but they have really caved to ESPN's stringent new approach to salaries. And yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, you need leverage, right? And if you don't have leverage, and if somebody says, hey, we're asking you to go from 300 to 190, and you don't have another offer, what are you going to do? You can't turn down $190,000 a year. You know, I'm just using these arbitrary numbers, but you know what I'm saying.
No, exactly. Exactly. So I think Fowler would be a really interesting case study to follow, because he's not at the crazy, you know, 15 plus that Aikman and Bucker are. He's not in Stephen A territory, but he's a guy who makes a really, really good living and deserves to make a good living. And let's see what ESPN's appetite for keeping Fowler is. There won't be anybody at ESPN who will say, we don't want to keep Chris Fowler. But are there going to be people who are going to be, dare I say, audacious enough to say, we only want to keep Chris Fowler at a certain price? I mean, to me, that sounds crazy, but let's see how far this discipline of theirs extends.
And yeah, that's an interesting, sorry to interrupt you. That's an interesting one to watch.
I mean, particularly because they could cross their hands and say, where else are you going to get tennis? We basically own tennis. Skipper got three of the four grand slams, right? I mean, where else are you going to do that? They spent $27 billion or more on college football. Where else are you going to get the kind of college football that we have? I mean, you could do it, but is CBS going to spend that money? Is Fox going to spend the money? Who knows? And then he'd have to give up tennis. You know, I mean, it's a very tricky situation. I hope ESPN will do the right thing. I mean, Chris deserves it. But I think that's, if you really want to put a specific kind of case study on it, I think that's one to watch.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm glad Fowler's a really interesting case. And I'm glad you brought that up. And it's unquestionably his talent is undeniable. I think if you're Fowler, Jim, I'm just going to use him as an example. You know, unless you've obviously blown all your money, which I'm sure he has not, I think at this point in his career, doing these events that he loves, you know, U.S. Open final and Wimbledon final and obviously the number one college football, that's where you, to me, like you figure out whatever the number is and you don't try to push the envelope. Like Fox, like, or NBC going for Chris Fowler and, you know, paying him more money than he would get at ESPN. I don't know if he gets the job satisfaction of those events if he leaves ESPN. At the same time, like, you know, you don't want to take a gigantic pay cut. You have a certain value that you think you have in the marketplace. But that, I don't know. Without knowing anything, I haven't talked to Fowler.
No, but it used to be. Look, it used to be.
I think they'll figure that out.
But it used to be. I would get calls from ESPN if I did talk about somebody's salary. And they'd say, oh, God, why did you have to do that? And we got a line outside our office now. Everybody's saying, oh, since so-and-so is making such-and-such, you know, now I want to make such and such. It was a real problem when salaries became public, or when like Tom Rinaldi basically doubled his salary, you know, leaving ESPN and going to Fox. There was, you know, the same thing happened over at Fox, but that doesn't happen now. And as a result, or at least it doesn't happen for a lot of people. And as a result, there's just a lot more instability and more uncertainty when you're going into a contract year.
All right, let's finish up with this. You wrote the book on HBO, which I highly recommend to anybody who's into HBO. And they have found, I don't want to call it a successor, but they have had great critical success so far with their adjacent to Game of Thrones show, House of Dragons. My sense is, without knowing anything, like it costs just a crazy amount of money to produce and put on. But they have, you know, I think, Jim, it's always tough, in my opinion, when you have this like a hit show and you try to do some adjacent programming to create a similar hit. I feel like the Star Wars people on Disney have done it awesome. Like, I love Andor, and I'm one who've watched all these short-run series, the Obi-Wan series, Boba Fett. But I really love House of Dragons. I think they're doing a phenomenal job. When you were, if you can give my listeners just some insight, you know, you obviously did a lot on the history of Game of Thrones and how that came to be. And so what's your just sort of impressions on how it looks like they have now found their, you know, content sequel to this? And it seems like they're going to have, you know, as long as they're investing the money, I feel like they got a show that they can put on for 4 or 5 years. That's going to be a big hit and draw great interest.
Well, in the book, I was able to report that they had canceled a previous project that they didn't have faith in. And I think looking back, that was obviously a wise decision because you don't get a lot of chances. You basically get one chance to show the audience when you're going to continue a franchise. Game of Thrones was the most popular, profitable series in HBO history. And so as a result, you have now, I mean, you got to give Casey Bloys and Francesca Orsi and her team, there's a lot of credit to be spread around about the fact that they pulled this off. There's no guarantees. You could have wound up with Jaws 2. I mean, so the fact that they were able to keep the George R.R. Martin flagship speeding along merrily is important. And it's particularly important given the fact that HBO and HBO Max is in such a critical, critical competitive environment now, particularly given its new owners and the financial rigor that they've been put under. So I think it shows that HBO still is doing incredible work. HBO is capable of continuing to produce great fare. And yes, it will certainly open up options for the future. At some point in shows like this, you might have somebody say, look, I know it's going to be popular, but it's going to also cost us, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, and we can't swing for the fences like that. That could happen. I don't think so, because these franchises bring in a lot of eyeballs. The biggest problem facing everyone now, though, is, and this adds to the uncertainty, of course, that we were talking about at the very beginning, it's so easy to cancel. You know, I mean, we grew up where you cancel the cable, you got to make an appointment with the cable guy, and then somehow you got to figure out how to reconnect your cable to the back of the TV without the box being there. And I mean, whatever. And then if you think, oh my gosh, we may want it in a month or two, you're going to have to, now you do it from your phone. And so, you know, are there people that are watching this House of Dragons and then all of a sudden when it's over, they're going to click off? Probably there are some, but that's why you have Mike White doing the sequel to White Lotus, or you have, you know, as much of that other stuff that's talkative and really attracts eyeballs as possible. So it's just everything is harder, Richard. Everything is harder. The stakes are higher and the uncertainty is at an all-time high. That's the environment that everyone is working in, both in terms of the creative side, people who are creating content, people who are managing content, and people who are following it on Wall Street.
All right. Do you want to curse about anybody or anything before we get out here?
One time. No.
You're good. Okay. All right. James Andrew Miller is the best-selling author of books on CAA, ESPN, Saturday Night Live, and HBO. Always great to talk about where ESPN is at the moment with him. Is there anything you want to promote, Jim, before we get out of here? You got any upcoming projects or writing?
Getting back on the Origins bandwagon and have a bunch of new chapters coming out, and excited about that.
All right. We'll look for that wherever you can get your podcast. All right, Jim, you'll be back, as you know. Thank you so much today for joining me on the Sports Media Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
All right, back in the studio. My thanks to Jim Miller, as always, for coming on and giving me some of his insight and time. Head to the archives. There should be some episodes that you will find of interest. Last couple, we had a long conversation with Bob Costas, which people seem to enjoy. Had Chad Finn on for some sports media talk this week, as well as Meredith Shiner, talking about her new podcast on the intersection of Jews and sports. Done a lot of stuff on this podcast on the coverage of Brett Favre and Mississippi's welfare scandal, so you can go back into the archives and see some of that stuff, as well as conversations with some behind-the-scenes NFL people, including Thursday Night Football and Prime Video executive producer Fred Godelli and lead director Pierre Musa. I want to thank Patrick Antonetti for all his hard work on this podcast. Thanks to everybody at Cadence 13. Again, if you like the stuff that you've been doing, please leave us a 5-star review and a nice note. That is how this podcast continues. All right, we'll be back very soon. But until then, thanks for joining me on the Sports Media Podcast.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.